Meditation 2 of the Parayana, The Way Beyond. We are at a storm threshold, not of events, but of time itself. This is Saint Mark. His given name was John Mark. His father was Cleophas, and his mother was Mary, one of four sisters of Jesus. So Saint Mark was a nephew of Jesus. At the Last Supper, John Mark was 9 years old, and he was the one who served the wine in the Holy Grail, the object that became the Holy Grail. And the reason he did this is that the Last Supper was held on the second floor of the Jerusalem house that Mary and Cleophas owned. And the hall was rather large because they did not sit at a table, but they lay on couches like banquets at the time were held. So it was rather large, and the house was rather large because it was a very wealthy family, as we will see. All of Jesus' four sisters married into very wealthy families. None of his four brothers married. John Mark, being but nine when the events of the crucifixion and resurrection happened, and because the family of Jesus had to exit not only Jerusalem and Judea, but almost everywhere on the far east coast of the Mediterranean. And a great many of them went by a trade route, leaving the port of Tyre in 37 AD. The crucifixion and the resurrection happened at Easter time, 36 AD. Jesus was 45 years old. Mary Magdalene was 45 years old. John Mark, Saint Mark, was nine. So he was left in charge with a tutor who was his cousin, James. This is Saint James. And Saint James was also a nephew of Jesus. And Saint James tutored and took care of the education of John Mark until he had his bar mitzvah at age 13, which was then 4 years after the 37 AD exodus, which brought it to 41 AD. James, who was the brother of St. John, were sons of the oldest sister of Jesus, Salome. And Salome married a man named Zebedee. Now Zebedee had a brother named Alphaeus, and they both were sons of their father's name was also Zebedee, and the grandfather's name was John. So that the name John runs in the family, and Saint John was named for his great-grandfather. Saint Mark's father, Cleophas, had two brothers. One was named Barnabas, and he was on the island of Cyprus, and as we will discover, almost all of the people connected with Jesus were involved in very wide international trade. Trade routes that went as far as India, and as far as Britain and Ireland and Wales. They were trade routes that went as far south as Ethiopia and Yemen and the Indian Ocean, and as far north as the Caspian Sea and across it into Central Asia. To say that Jesus was well connected is not just a pun, but is an actual fact. When St. James witnessed the bar mitzvah of Mark, Saint Mark to be. He left Jerusalem, he left the Mediterranean and went to Spain to become the apostle for Spain, and today the great center in Spain is named for him. In Spanish, it wasn't Saint James but Santiago, and so Santiago de Compostela in the north of Spain is where the patron saint of Christianity in Spain, Saint James, is. James was there for 3 years, and on his way back in 44 AD, when he came back into Jerusalem, the interim person who took over the community in Jerusalem was Jesus's brother James the Just. And there's been a great deal of confusion because both had the name James. When our Saint James came back, the ruler was Herod Antipas, and we will get to him in other presentations in detail. He beheaded Saint James, and James the Just kept his position as the first bishop of the Christian Church of Jerusalem. John Mark, meantime, after James was beheaded, was arrested along with Saint Peter, and they were put into prison. And miraculously, the prison doors were opened, and they were able to escape, but they could not stay in Jerusalem or Judea or anywhere near, and so they fled into a part of Egypt where they would be safe. They couldn't go to Alexandria because that was in chaos and turmoil for Jews and proto-Christians alike. So they went to Old Cairo on the Nile River, and there was a huge Roman fortress called Babylon. And in this fortress, it was so large that today there are 6 Coptic Christian churches, among other buildings, in that fortress. And just to locate it for you, it's on the east side of the Nile River, about a half mile from the Giza Bridge that goes over the Nile. And it goes over in 2 parts because there's a long island in the Nile. And it was bridged from the land to the island, and then from the island over to the Giza Plateau. You could see the pyramids from the top of the ridge just south of the Fortress of Babylon. In the Fortress of Babylon, there is still the original church that was founded by John Mark, now becomes Saint Mark, because when he was there with Peter, they were hiding out. Then they went back to Jerusalem, and in going back, Cleophas's brother Barnabas, the third son in that family tree, was named Aristobulus. We'll talk about him in about 5 or 6 presentations. Barnabas was the one who went to Tarsus to bring Paul out of his self-exile. He was originally a prosecutor of Christians, of men and women. He went searching for them, arrested them, brought them back to trial, and they were killed. His teacher was Gamaliel, who was the head of the Sanhedrin power structure at the time. And it's interesting because when Barnabas brought Paul back after 14 years of self-exile, he's the one who took him to Antioch and for a year brought him back into play and began Paul's missionary vision. And so St. Paul owes his missionary years. They lasted only 7 years, by the way, from around 52 to about 59-60 AD. John Mark was taken with Barnabas, his uncle, to go on the first missionary tour of Paul, and they got as far as Cyprus, and when they got to the mainland, which is now was Asia Minor then, is Turkey now, John Mark could not get along with Paul, and so he left and went back along the family trade route back to Cyprus, back to Judea, and resumed being there with Peter. It's interesting because at the time of Paul being arrested, he claimed that he was a Roman citizen and could not be killed unless he received a trial in Rome, and so the procurator of Judea sent him to Rome. And just before then, Peter had gone to Rome with John Mark. Paul was eventually, after 2 years of imprisonment in Rome, he had been imprisoned for a couple of years in Judea, was beheaded in 64 AD, and Peter was crucified at his request upside down, and the site of the crucifixion is where St. Peter's Cathedral in the Vatican is today. John Mark fled from Rome, made his way back to the Babylon fortress in Egypt, and was there for 14 years, almost like a kind of resonant replay of Paul's 14 years being in self-exile. St. Mark was in self-exile in Old Cairo, and the church is still there. Christian churches in Muslim Egypt cannot build new ones. They can hardly refurbish old ones without specific permission, and so they keep up the ancient traditions as best they can. The church of the six in the Roman fortress Babylon that is still there in Old Cairo is called Al-Malaka, and Al-Malaka is built so that it sways into the massive Roman walls of that fortress. They were 20 feet thick, and they were about 30-some feet high. And the Al-Malaka church is slung, not built on the ground, but slung from another structure into the wall. And this hanging church had a little chapel up above it. And that little chapel today is still called St. Mark's Chapel. And in that chapel, when it was viewed by A.J. Butler in two volumes, this is volume one, The Ancient Coptic Churches of Egypt. He was there in the 1880s. One could still see the bench and the podium that St. Mark used there almost 2,000 years ago. They're still there. St. Mark stayed in Old Cairo until about 80 AD. And the reason that he did so is that after the period of great turmoil against the Jews in Alexandria, the pogroms under Caligula and then under Claudius, and then relented somewhat after Nero was displaced and killed, and a new dynasty came in, not the Caesars, but the Flavians under Vespasian, and we'll talk about him in a little bit of how peculiar it was. He and his two sons, Titus and Domitian, became the three Roman emperors after the Caesars. At that time, St. Mark could have gone to Alexandria, except that there was a powerful Christian community not following the church, but following Jesus' way in Alexandria. It had been founded by Jesus himself, not as a church, but as a way. And the way originally was passed on to an eyewitness of Jesus named Philo, Philo of Alexandria. And when Philo passed away about 45 AD, the new person overseeing the way in Alexandria was named Apollos. And Apollos is the author in the New Testament of the Epistle to the Hebrews, one of the most beautiful and stringent documents in the New Testament. The companion of Jesus during all those Alexandrian years, from about age 18 on, was Mary Magdalene. Mary Magdalene had been born on the Sea of Galilee in Magdala, but it was more like a resort second home. The primary contact for them was in the city of Tyre because the family was involved in the great trade routes that went from the ancient Phoenicia all the way out through the Straits of Gibraltar, down the coasts of Africa and up the coast of Spain and Gaul, which became France, all the way to Britain. But a new route was founded, and the route went from Tyre all the way over to the mouth of the Rhone River in the south of France, where Marseille is today, up the Rhone River to a place where there was a side stream of the Rhone River, south of the big city of Lyon, south of the ancient large city at the time of Vienne. And this little side river today has a community. It's a medium-sized town, about 200,000 people, called St. Mariglise. And the little village next to it is called Firmini. And Firmini is one of the great architectural sites in the world. Three of Le Corbusier's great buildings are built there, and the Firmini Church was featured in June 2007 issue of Architectural Digest. This church is built so that one has a view in behind it of a mountain, a small mountain, and it's called Pilate's Peak. And it's named Pilate's Peak because from that place in Firmini, one can go very easy across the valley and come to the Loire River. And one can make that simple little portage there at Firmini, and one can then go up the Loire all the way curving around through France to the Atlantic Ocean. And if one goes out into the Atlantic Ocean in the bay there where the mouth of the Loire is, one of the headlands that you will come to on your way to England is called Matthew's Point. That trade route was inherited by a family consortium. One of the leaders of that consortium was Joseph of Arimathea, who married the youngest sister of Jesus named Susanna. His sisters were named Joanna for Joseph and Anna, Mary, Salome because she was born in Alexandria, and Hellenistic Jews in Alexandria would favor that name. And the fourth sister was Susanna, named Susanna for the great figure who was an addition to the book of Daniel. And we'll talk about that probably in 2 weeks. Mary Magdalene's older brother, Lazarus, was one of the important people in that trade route that went from Tyre all the way to the west coast of Britain and the south coast of Wales. They went there for very precious metals, especially tin. One writer, Lionel Smithies Jones, said in the 1920s in his book, one can still hear when tinsmiths work in the west of England, they always say a blessing, and the blessing is Joseph was in the tin trade, linking themselves and their profession with the brother-in-law of Jesus, Joseph of Arimathea. William Blake has a famous poem on Joseph of Arimathea. The reason why Lazarus was a part of the community and a part of that corporation is that his father, who's named Simon, so Lazarus's full name is Lazarus Bar Simon, and Simon was one of the heads of that trading company, so that they were very wealthy. He came down with leprosy, and so they had to move him, and they moved the household to the far side of the Mount of Olives, where there were cemeteries and there was a leper colony, and they built a very large estate in the little village called Bethany. And it's in Bethany that the wife of Simon, the mother of Mary Magdalene, and her older sister Martha kept this estate, this rather large villa. How large? If you read in the Gospels about the raising of Lazarus, the house was filled with people mourning Lazarus's passing, trying to comfort Mary Magdalene especially, because they were very close. Because while the family estate was moved to Bethany, Mary Magdalene, who was at the time about 9 years old, was put under the charge of her older brother, Lazarus, about 10 years older than her, in Tyre. And so Mary Magdalene received one of the rare great educations. She was taught, because Tyre is one of the major ports of ancient Phoenicia, which was in the province of Syria, and she learned how to read and write Syriac, as well as Greek, as well as Hebrew, as well as Aramaic and Latin. She was university educated. She was extraordinary, and she was given not only the best education one could have, she became a literary genius, and she also is the person who made the sketches. This sketch of St. Mark and the sketch of St. James, which I showed you earlier, and also this sketch of St. John as a young man. Now, when Mary Magdalene was taken by her brother, she got to be about 18, and it was realized she was not going to marry. She was a spiritual genius of the first order. And so part of the trade route that that group ran went to Alexandria, of course. And it was Lazarus who took Mary Magdalene at about 18 to Alexandria and made the introductions for her through Philo's family to go out to the therapeutic community about 25 miles south of Alexandria. A book came out about a dozen years ago, Jewish Women Philosophers of First Century Alexandria, Philo's Therapeutae Reconsidered. His book on the contemplative life is one of the great eyewitnesses of Jesus' teaching before he went on his mission to Judea. So all these sketches of John Mark, of St. James, of St. John, remember now St. James was beheaded in 44 AD, so this sketch was made probably at the time that he was going on his way to Spain. He would have been, he was 25 at the crucifixion, resurrection, and so 8 years later, he would have been about 33 years old. The way that one went, usually from Tyre, was to go up through Cyprus and to go across the Mediterranean to the mouth of the Aegean Sea and make a little dog leg there, because the classic little cities were extremely wealthy and powerful, and the largest of them was Ephesus. And it was at Ephesus where Mary Magdalene and St. John went in 37 AD, while the four sisters of Jesus and their four husbands and Lazarus and his older sister Martha all went to the west coast of Britain along with Nicodemus and with the young daughter of Joseph of Arimathea and Susanna, and her name was Anna. And going to Ephesus, there was St. John, who at the time was about 12, and his mentor for his bar mitzvah coming up the next year was Mary Magdalene herself. And so when one takes a look at the rediscovered 42 odes to Solomon, written by Mary Magdalene, the language is extremely close to the language of the Gospel of St. John and to the letters of St. John, to the Book of Revelation of St. John. Close because she raised him from age 12 on. St. Mark, by the way, was quite literate because the whole family were literate. One can find a half a dozen books on the influence of Homer's epics on the gospel according to Mark. It was extremely, they were all well-versed, beautifully raised. We have to understand that not only were St. James, St. Mark, and St. John authors of three of the four gospels, they were all cousins. Because Matthew was also a cousin. Now Matthew's father was Alphaeus, and Alphaeus was the brother of Zebedee, so that James and John were cousins of Matthew and his brother, who was also a James, usually called James the Less, one of the apostles. So that the 12 apostles had three pairs of brothers, Peter and Andrew, James and John, Matthew, and James the Less. Now, this particular portrait of Matthew is one that I have made. This has not been seen since the time of Jesus. All of these portraits occur on the great chalice of Antioch, which was put together about 100 AD in Antioch. And the reason it was put together is because the cup of the Last Supper that became the Grail was taken to the far west of Britain to the site which we know today as Glastonbury. And that cup had to be hidden once and dropped into a well that's called the Chalice Well there at Glastonbury. That cup passed from Mary, the sister who was the mother of Mark, who was the wife of Cleophas. It passed from her to her daughter, Anna, when Susanna passed away. Anna married the king of Cornwall. His name was Ballymawr, M-A-W-R. And King Ballymawr is one of the great figures in early history of Britain. It wasn't England yet. There were no Angles and Saxons there yet. There were just the ancient Brits, the ancient Celts, the ancient Welsh, the ancient Irish, the ancient Scots. The daughter that received the cup from Anna was named Penrhyn, Penarddin, usually in English pronunciation. And Penarddin married a king from the confluence of southern Scotland and northern Ireland and northern Wales, and his name was spelled in Welsh, L-L-Y-R, in ancient Irish, L-E-R, in Shakespeare, L-E-A-R, but the Scottish spelling, like my name, ended with an I-R. So King Lear, L-E-I-R, married the granddaughter of the youngest sister of Jesus. And that family inherited the cup. But what happened then was that Penarddin was so charismatic and so attractive that after she had two sons and a daughter by King Lear, she was hijacked by a very powerful baron, and she was kept as a house captive for him the rest of her life and forced to have two sons by him. So that the cup that had gone from the Last Supper that young Saint Mark had used to serve when he was just 9 years old, that cup could no longer be kept in the family lineage. And so one of the sons of Penarddin and King Lear, whose name was Bran, in ancient Celtic, it's pronounced sometimes Bran, Bran the Blessed. He's the one that took the cup because it could no longer stay in ancient Britain in the family lineage. It had to be returned for safekeeping, to keep it out of the, not only the confusion that came up, but Lear himself was driven almost mad by the events, by the cruel twist. And so he went to live with relatives in France, in Gaul. And so the French part of the family in Brittany, Britons in Brittany, they're all of the same tribe, the Belgae. Lear went there, remarried, and had three daughters. And that's the Lear that we see in Shakespeare's King Lear. After the family was broken, after the lineage was broken, after the grail passed on was broken, and the grail was taken back to Antioch, and at that time, about 100 AD, all of the sketches of Mary Magdalene had been taken to Antioch. And they were put into a form of a sheath for the cup, so that the Great Chalice of Antioch has the grail inside of it. And the sheath of it was all gold work, and it had 12 portraits on it. Two of the portraits are of Jesus, and they are by Mary Magdalene. One is of the young Jesus, He was about 22 years of age. And this is Jesus' teaching about 14 AD when he became the head of the therapeutic community. Philo says it's not just the eldest in terms of years, but it's the eldest in terms of the spiritual experience. And Jesus had the most spiritual experience of anyone on the planet. She also, when he was going to his mission, his ministry, did the sketch of the mature Jesus. This is Jesus about 22, this is Jesus about 45 years of age. The portraits we'll talk about in a future presentation are a classic use of sacred and secret geometry. The focus is on one eye, and all the rest of the portraiture is a spiral out from that one eye. And if one looks closely at the great chalice of Antioch in its sheath, and it is published in two big elephant folio volumes in 1923, published in New York City, because when the chalice of Antioch was found in 1909, three very rich Arabic French brothers who had Antioch and Paris and New York, all of the great antique centers covered, they bought the great chalice of Antioch. They took it to Paris. And then because of the delicacy of the times, it was World War I, it was taken for safekeeping to New York and is still in New York. If you'd like to see the Grail is in the cloisters on the Hudson River near Columbia University, and it's packed away because later scholars discredit, like they always discredit, what they're unable to envision and understand. What's important is that these sketches of the young Jesus, the sketches of the young St. John, the sketches, as we've looked at, of the young St. James, were all made using a classic model. And the great model for that is the great portraiture of the Greek sculptor Scopias. And we'll talk next week about Scopias. We're going to take a little bit of a break. What we're trying to appreciate and understand is that the great convolution surrounding Jesus can be understood if one takes a tack of looking at the center of one of the eyes and allowing that contact to be a pivot of penetration. It's not the focus of two eyes to a point, but it's the use of one eye meeting the other's eye. And the other's eye are not their two eyes, but the inner sense of sight. Jesus had a way of speaking, of looking, of doing that was accumulated penetration is the best way to say it. It is in Sanskrit, it's called a stithipana darshan. It means being able to steadily see, and as you steadily see, you see deeper and deeper and more and more. In astronomy, before we had all the large computer telescopes, you would look through a telescope and you would have to not stare at what you were looking at, but use what astronomers used to call averted vision. You kept looking, but you let your eye get averted so that you kept returning in an iteration so that you kept the clarity of sight. Otherwise, the blinking of the atmosphere would keep a steady gaze scattered, whereas if you used averted vision, It was like adaptive optics. Spiritually, the most powerful yoga is to allow for the accumulated penetration of a vision to occur in such a way that the scale of the inner dimensions of consciousness unfold their wings. Let's take a little break.